Okay, so kind of gave the game away there. Supremacy of Christ. But isn't it weird the way Hebrews gets there? What's the big deal with the angels? You know, this whole first chapter is all about the angels and Jesus' relationship with the angels. Why is over half a chapter of Hebrews given to this? And some people sort of speculate that, you know, maybe it was because when this letter was originally sent out, or this sermon was originally kind of transcribed and sent out, it was being sent to a church that had just got, you know, its whole thinking about angels and spirituality out of whack. And you know, here were people who were starting now to worship angels. Well, that might be the case. That might be the case. You know, we do have a propensity to worship angels. You know, here's the Apostle John, who knew a thing or two about angels and Jesus. But when he's confronted with an angel, it's like, he falls at his feet to worship him. And the angel says to John, "Don't do that! I'm a fellow servant with you, with your brothers and sisters who hold to the testimony of Jesus. Worship God." But even though there are kind of warnings like that in the Bible, there, every now and again you do discover in the church a sort of an unhealthy interest and relationship to angels. And even outside of the church, you know, angels hold a very prominent place in our culture's sort of spirituality. You know, if you have a look, you know, the books that you can buy about angels, there's loads of them. Absolutely shed loads of these things. And you can go to seminars that will help you hear your angel and learn angelic wisdom that will help you with your financial investments, and it will help you with your relationships. It's extraordinary what's out there. And you can go to people who will give you angel readings. I have no idea what they are, but you can pay a lot of money and have one done. You know, there are conferences about how to get in touch with your angel. This is big business. This is a big field of spirituality that there is. And funerals. It's really interesting. We do funerals, and quite a lot of them of people and for families who are not Christians. And it's really interesting how often angels come up in funerals. And particularly the idea that the person who's died has now become like a guardian angel who's going to watch over their family now. That is very, very common. Massive in fiction. Loads of TV shows, books, where angels are like a kind of a prominent thesis within computer games. You know what? There's a bit of me that thinks, if we could get our thinking on angels straight, there could be a really significant point of contact with our culture in terms of mission and connecting with spirituality and finding a way in to talk to people about Jesus. Maybe Hebrews 1 has got far more evangelistic impact than we would ever have imagined. But I want to say to you, look, you know, that whole thing about maybe the original recipients of this letter had their, you know, they were starting to worship angels as part of their Christian spirituality. That may or may not be the case. But actually, in the text of Hebrews itself, it tells us why, or at least some of the reasons why, we're spending, you know, nine, ten verses exploring Christ's superiority to the angels. And the first thing to say is this: it is part of a recurring pattern within the book of Hebrews. The whole first section of Hebrews is basically follows a formula, which you can't miss. As soon as you read it, you're like, it's just repetitive. You know, Jesus is greater than, fill in the gap. He's greater than angels. Jesus is greater than Moses. He's greater than Joshua. He's greater than the Sabbath. He's greater than the sacrifices. He's greater than the tabernacle. He's greater than the priest. He's greater than the high priests. You start off in Hebrews chapter 1 verse 1, and you've got this idea that in the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. You know, that through all of these things, God is speaking. He is revealing some truth about Jesus through all of these things, all these people, all these institutions, all these events are foreshadowing, teaching about Christ and about who he is and about what he's going to do when he comes in the flesh. And they're built into the worshiping life of the ancient church so that we have the categories to understand who Jesus is and what Jesus is going to be doing when he comes. All right, so the high priest, God, through the prophets, puts into the worship of Israel this person, the high priest, this particular role. And he has to do certain things. Why? Because he is showing us, teaching us what Christ is going to be like when he comes. So when he comes, he goes, Jesus is your great high priest. Well, we know what that's talking about because we've been watching the high priest do his high priestly stuff for generations throughout the Old Testament. All right, these are categories built into the life and the worship of the church so that we can understand Jesus. A lot of what's going on in the Old Testament is like jigsaw puzzle pieces that are being given to us that we can put together to form, to build up the portrait of Christ. And it's really important that we understand, okay, Jesus is like high priest. Jesus is like the Sabbath. He is like Joshua. He is like Moses. They were given to us to teach us about Jesus. But Jesus is far superior to all of these guys and all of these institutions. He's like angels, but he is greater. All right, we're going to think tonight, how is he like angels and how is he greater than the angels? We'll find as well that he's laying the groundwork for some of the stuff we're going to start looking at in Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2 opens with this. You know, the message that was spoken through angels was binding. Talking about the covenant that was given at Mount Sinai. That was given through angels. And every violation and disobedience received its just punishment. How shall we escape if we ignore so great a salvation? So the argument is, the angels administered this Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament covenant. All right, we see that again and again. Stephen in Acts chapter 7, addressing the religious leaders of his day. You betrayed and murdered the righteous one. You who have received the law that was given through angels, but have not obeyed it. Paul comes back to it in Galatians 3. The law was given through angels and entrusted to a mediator. So you've got this Old Testament covenant given through angels. And the argument is going to be, Jesus is greater than the angels, so the covenant that comes through him and that is administered through him is greater than the one that was given through the angels. So it's important that we get into our heads, Jesus is superior to the angels. We get this as well in Hebrews chapter 2, verse 9. There's this sense in which the angels are like a spiritual fixed point in the universe. You know, they are in some ways the height, or the high point at the moment at least. They are the high point of the created order when it comes to spiritual reality. Everything else is variable. You know, humanity can go up or down. All right? Jesus, even Jesus can go up or down. The angels are fixed. They don't move. All right? So, you know, Jesus starts, as it were, amongst the angels. He's made lower than the angels for a little while, and then he ascends above the angels. So Jesus is moving in relation to this fixed point. And humanity moves in relationship to this fixed point. At the moment, we are lower than the angels. But there is a day coming when we will judge the angels. So they're like this sort of fixed mark that we just kind of measure everything else against. So it's important to see where Jesus is in relationship to the angels. The third thing that's going on here is to do with salvation. I might just hold off on this. We'll deal with this properly when we get to it. But there's a big deal about the fact that Jesus is superior to the angels, and that is why he can save us. That's why he can redeem us. No angel could redeem us. So if Jesus is only an angel, he cannot be our savior. All right, we'll get to that in Hebrews chapter 2. That's probably too big to throw in as part of an introduction. All right, so that's all coming in chapter 2. And this is laying the foundation for those arguments that we're going to follow through. But even in Hebrews chapter 1, there is a significant thing going on here that explains why he spends these 10 verses unpacking the idea of Jesus' superiority to the angels. And it's in that opening little section, just as it comes to an end. It's like the trigger that launches into these 7 Old Testament references that are talking about the supremacy and the superiority of Christ over the angels. It just finishes by saying this, exalting Christ. Christ became as much superior to the angels as the name he has inherited is superior to theirs. All right? I don't know if you've ever thought, what does that actually mean? Why is it even an issue? You know, what's going on with his name and the name or the title that the angels have and the name and the title that Jesus has? And why would that cause confusion? Why does he need to make the point that Jesus is superior to the angels and that his name, his title is superior to the name, the title of the angels? Right, and that's kind of our launch. That's how we're going to get into this tonight, because the part of the problem is the name that Jesus has in the Old Testament. All right, you see, before he's given the name Jesus, when he becomes human, when the Word becomes flesh, that is when he is given the name Jesus. All right, before that, he's still around. He's not just sort of sitting around in heaven playing ping pong, wondering when it's time for the incarnation. Right, he's around. He's engaged in the life of the church and of the world. But he's not called Jesus yet. He's called loads of different things. One of the names that is given to Christ, the Son of God, before he becomes human, is he is called the Angel of the Lord. That's his name. He is the Angel of the Lord. And the question in Hebrews 1 is, when he's called an angel, is he the same as all the other angels? Is he just another angel? And there are lots of kind of distorted visions of Christianity that would want to say, yes, Jesus is just an angel. But Hebrews is wanting to say, no. All right? The fact that they have the same name, don't let that throw you. Jesus is superior to the angels. Now, this is what we're going to unpack a little bit tonight. I'm going to give you one Greek word, okay? I know this is a little bit tricky, a little bit pretentious, I think. But it's absolutely key to understanding what's going on here. In Greek, which is the language that the book of Hebrews was written in, the word angelos. And you can even hear the word angel in that, can't you? Angelos. All right? An angel is not, and you've got to get this, an angel is not a kind of cosmic spiritual creature with wings and things like that. All right? An angel is an office. Anyone can be an angel. All right? It simply means messenger. A messenger is an angel. Yeah? So, the things that we usually think of as angels, you know, the mental image we conjure up in our minds when we think of angels, their angel is what they do. Angel is their function. Angel is the office, the purpose they have. They are the ambassadors. They are the ones who are sent by the Lord to do stuff, to bring messages. They are messengers. Yeah, they're actually called, you know, the angels, as we usually think of them, are actually a whole range of creatures called cherubim and seraphim and watchers and living ones. But they're all sent by the Lord. They're all messengers of the Lord who are sent by God to do his will. All right, that's really, really important to get. Gabriel gets this, obviously, being one. So Gabriel is like, this is Gabriel to Zachariah. It's like, I am Gabriel and I stand in the presence of God and I have been sent to speak to you. All right. Luke knows what's going on. God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, a town in Galilee. Of course you send an angel. That's what an angel is. An angel is someone or something who is sent to do something. An ambassador, a messenger, a representative of some kind. That's what an angel does. That's what an angel is. All right? And this is how Jesus actually refers to himself even after the incarnation. All right, how often does Jesus talk about himself as the one who has been sent from the Father or by the Father? All right, there are loads of times this happens. Let me just quickly run through a half a dozen. My food, said Jesus in John 4, is to do the will of him who sent me to finish his work. John 5, whoever does not honor the Son does not honor the Father who sent him. John 6, Jesus answered, the work of God is this, believe in the one he has sent. John 7, my teaching is not my own, it comes from the one who sent me. John 8, Jesus said to them, if God were your Father, you would love me, for I have come here from God. I have not come on my own, God sent me. All right, you see, this is who Jesus is. This is what Jesus is. He is the one who has been sent by the Father. And that's not just about his incarnation. All right, this is the same dynamic that there is within the life of the Godhead even before his incarnation. He is the sent one of the Lord, or the angel of the Lord. Yeah, he is Hebrews 1. He is the radiance of God's glory. He is the one who is sent forth from God to come to us, to bring God to us, and to bring us to God. All right, think about it this way. Before the incarnation, now, in the whole Bible, who ever saw God the Father? Whoever saw God the Father? No one. No one. Okay? Exodus 33, Moses asks to see God the Father, and what does the Father say to him? No one can see me and live. Yeah? In Deuteronomy 4, it's really interesting. Moses is saying, at Mount Sinai, you heard the voice of God the Father. But he says, Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 12, he makes the point, you saw no form. You only heard a voice. No one can see God the Father. Which is, we're told that, aren't we? John chapter 1, verse 18. We know it so well. No one has seen the Father except the Son. Only the one and only Son, who is himself God. He has seen the Father and he has made him known. Right, that's always been the way God has worked. Right, the Father always sends his Son, the angel of the Lord, to reveal him. Nobody comes to the Father directly. We always come to the Father through the Son. I am the way. No one comes to the Father except through me. Right? This is absolute basic Christianity. And it has been since Genesis chapter 1. All right, he is the one sent from the Father. And here's what I'm going to suggest now is that in the Old Testament, everybody knew this is the way God worked. All right, everyone knew that there was the angel of the Lord, the one who was sent from the Lord, and everyone knew that angel was the Lord. Yeah, I'm going to give you just two or three examples of this. But this is, if you've never seen this before, go home, make yourself a cup of tea, pour yourself a glass of wine or a beer or whatever it is that you fancy, and get a concordance or get Bible Gateway up and just go through this and see it over and over and over again. Hagar, Genesis 16. All right, Hagar runs away from Abraham and Sarah, and she is met by the angel of the Lord who told her, go back to Sarah. And she declares the name of the angel of the Lord. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. All right, so Hagar is met by the angel of the Lord, and she recognizes he is the Lord, He is the God who has seen me. The angel of the Lord is God. We're like, that's confusing. I'm like, no, it's not. That's what we believe about Jesus. He is the one who has come to us from the Father. He is the angel, the sent one from God, and he is God. And that's what we've always believed. The church has always believed this. Here's another one. Genesis 48. So Jacob is blessing. He's blessing the sons of Joseph. He says, may the God before whom my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, walked faithfully. The God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day. The angel who has delivered me from all harm. May he bless these boys. All right. So this is Jacob, the guy that wrestled with the angel of the Lord. And he's like, yeah, that was God. That's the God who has been my shepherd. All right, Judges chapter 2. Oh, the angel of the Lord in Judges is immense. But here it is. Judges 2. The angel of the Lord said, I brought you up out of Egypt and led you into the land that I swore to give your ancestors. I said, I will never bring... You see, that's God speaking. It is God, the God who is the sent one of the Lord, the angel of the Lord. All right, Hosea, see it's all the way through the Old Testament. Hosea 12, Hosea talking about Jacob and Esau. In the womb, Jacob grasped his brother's heel. And as a man, he struggled with God, the whole wrestling with God through the night. He struggled with God. He struggled with the angel and overcame him. All right, you see again the idea, there's this angel of God who is God. And all the saints of the Old Testament, they knew that. They got that. They understood that. They understood that that there was this one who was God who was sent from God. So this character who's appearing all the way, Genesis, right the way through to the minor prophets, the angel of the Lord. And here's the question that Hebrews is asking. Does this mean that he is the same as all the other angels? Now, you're going to see this a lot. All right, Hebrews answering questions that we don't ask. But the reason we don't ask the questions is we don't know our Old Testaments. If you're reading your Old Testament, there are all kinds of questions that we should have at the fore. Like, does it matter that Jesus doesn't come from the tribe of Levi? Right, that is such an important question. Hebrews is going to spend like an entire chapter dealing with that. Because, you know, that could be a reason why Jesus isn't the Messiah. Right? We're like, whoa, hang on a minute, I thought the Messiah was supposed to come from Judah. Well, yeah. Right, we'll get to it in the Hebrews 7. But that's what Hebrews says. All these questions that we should have reading the Old Testament, but we don't, because we don't really read the Old Testament like this. Yeah? So who is he then the same as all the angels? In one way, yes, he is. This is the point. He is like all the other angels because he is the angel of the Lord. He is someone who is sent by the Father to do something. So in that sense, yes, he is. And it's interesting, isn't it, that actually the Father talks about how he has set his son over his companions. So actually there is this companionship between Jesus and the other angels. Because they do share this title, this name, the angel. But, there are so many ways, and this is what Hebrews 1 is saying, there are so many ways in which, you know, the Old Testament teaches us that Jesus is superior to the angels. And remember, the angels are the fixed high point of creation. So as soon as you say there is someone who is superior to the angels, now you're saying there is someone who is above and beyond, if you like, the upper limit of creation. So to say there is someone superior to the angels is a huge thing in terms of biblical spirituality. All right, now, straight away we just come into this. Hebrews chapter 1. I've totally lost my place. Where am I going? All right, superior to the angels. All right, well, we've already touched on this a little bit. You know, the whole idea of Jesus creating, being involved in creating the universe, that is only something that God can do.
Only God creates. Only God saves. All right, Jesus has provided purification for sins. Again, in the Old Testament, only God can say, Isaiah 43:11, I am the Lord. Apart from me, there is no Savior. Yeah? So already, even before we get into these sort of seven quotes, he's already been saying Jesus is superior to the angels. Because he's doing things that only God can do. He's creating. He's saving. So before we even get here, he's already making his case. But then he hits us with these seven references that show us that he is superior to the angels. And why? And remember, there's seven of them. So this is like a way of saying this is the complete testimony of the Old Testament. Everything in the Old Testament is telling us that Jesus is superior to and supreme over the angels. Chapter 1, verse 5, he is the Son. Yes, he is sent, but he is the Son who is being sent from the Father. He is not another created being like the cherubim and the seraphim and the watchers and the living ones. This is the Son, the one who created all the other angels. He is the one who is being sent. In chapter 1, verse 6, the angels are called on to worship Christ. Feel the force of that. God sends his Son into the world, and he says to all the other angels, worship him. Now, this is the God who says, I am the God who brought you out of Egypt. You shall have no other gods before me. Worship Jesus. All right? This is the God who says, Isaiah 42, I will not yield my glory to another or my praise to idols. Saying, this angel, worship him. Right? That is huge. The mightiest creatures in creation. The creatures that are the high point of creation as it stands at the moment. And they, creatures that we are tempted to bow down and worship. And they are told to fall on their faces before this angel, the angel of the Lord. The Son, who is the heir of all creation. Chapter 1, verses 7 and 8 of Hebrews. There's this contrast between the angels, who are the servants, and the Son, who is called God. Yeah? This is a great one. You know, if Jehovah's Witnesses ever call around to your house, invite them in, give them a cup of fruit tea, because they don't do caffeine, but give them a cup of fruit tea, and sit them down and do a Bible study on Hebrews 1. Yeah? About the Son, he says, your throne, O God. Right? The Father, speaking to his Son, calls his Son God. All right? You are not going to get a more direct recognition of the deity of Christ than Hebrews chapter 1, verse 8. About the Son, he says, your throne, O God. Yeah? The angels are servants. This angel is God. Chapter 1, verse 10. Again, declared to be the Lord. Again, declared to be creator. And again, only God can create. Isaiah 45:18. This is what the Lord says. He who created the heavens. He is God. He who fashioned and made the earth. He founded it. He says, I am the Lord, there is no other. All right, as soon as you say Jesus is creator, you're saying Jesus is doing what only God can do. We're talking here about the angel of the Lord, who is the Lord. All right, the eternality of Christ, your years will never end. Hebrews chapter 1, verse 13, Psalm 110. Just picking up on that. The invitation to sit on the very throne of God. Sit at my right hand until I make your enemies a footstool for your feet. There is no creature that the Father would ever say, you have a right to sit on my throne. That's not going to happen. And yet here is Jesus. Come, sit. Sit on the throne of God. See, the angels are those who serve us. the very end of Hebrews chapter 1. Are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation? The angels are sent to serve us, those who have been purified from their sin by the angel of the Lord. We serve the angel of the Lord. The angels serve us. And there might be a link here between verses 13 and 14. This, you know, the idea of the enemies being made a footstool for Christ's feet and the angels serving us. Because who are the enemies of Christ? The enemies of Christ are those who are seeking to frustrate his desire to save his people. So the defeat of Christ's enemies is to do with our perseverance. It is to do with us keeping our faith in Christ. And these angels may well be those who are standing between us and the spiritual forces that would seek to destroy our faith. They are standing before us. They are defending us. They are fighting on our behalf. Whether or not that is the case, I want to suggest to you that one of the take-homes from this is about security. Jesus is seated on the throne. All right? Now, this is important. Security is going to be one of the big issues. Our confidence, our assurance, our security as Christians is probably one of the three big hits in the book of Hebrews. By the time we finish Hebrews, none of us should ever doubt that we are Christians. That is the big pastoral take home from the whole book of Hebrews. And it starts right here in chapter 1. There is no enemy who will triumph over the angel of the Lord. All right. All the enemies of Christ will be made a footstool for his feet. No enemy will achieve what they want to achieve against Jesus. You have to get it. Jesus is on a throne. He is supreme. He's not a chairman, like answerable to a board. Okay? There's no one he has to run an idea past before he can put it into policy. There's no one whose permission he has to get before he's allowed to execute his plans. There's no one whose vote he has to secure before he can get his own way. There is no one whose guidance he must seek. He doesn't have to negotiate with other powers in order to get something he wants, or to the point where he has to accept something less than he set out to achieve. Our God is in heaven. Psalm 115 verse 3. And he does what pleases him. And what pleases him is to save his church. Alright? The point of saying Christ is superior to all these other cosmic spiritual forces in the world is to say there is nothing that can frustrate his design to purify a people from their sins for himself. That, all right, if you're like, I don't really care about all this superiority over the angels thing, just take home this one point. If there was anyone who could have a decent crack at Jesus, it would be an angel. And Christ is superior to them all. Nothing in all creation will be able to stop Christ from saving you. It is the scepter of his kingdom that shapes the life of his creation. All the power structures of creation, Hebrews 1 tells us, will be rolled up like a piece of dirty cloth. And in the end, it is only his will, the righteousness that he loves, that will prevail. All right, you know, we live in a terrifying world. And there are times when I'm pretty sure most of us wonder if we will actually make it as Christians. Some of the forces that are arrayed against us, the temptations that we face to drift, to despair, to give up. Will I persevere to the end? Will I be preserved till the end? And Hebrews chapter 1 says, yes, you will Because Christ is superior. Christ is superior. And we can sit here and go, yeah, we all knew that when we walked in here tonight, right? We all knew that. Why are we spending 10 verses unpacking what we already knew? Because it's important that we know why. See, it's easy here tonight to go, Christ is supreme. Right? It's really hard when you're facing temptation to drift, when you're facing temptation to despair, when you're facing temptation to give up, when you're facing the temptation to find your satisfaction, your meaning, your identity, your salvation, your sense of significance somewhere else, in someone else. It's much harder then to believe that Christ is supreme. And understanding the arguments why might just give a little bit more solidity and structure to our confession of the superiority of Christ. It might just help us stand firm when we face those sorts of temptations. The temptation to behave, to believe as if something or someone other than Christ is actually supreme. Or maybe just more satisfying. And it is so important we do not capitulate to that temptation. Because as we'll see next week, if we drift from Christ, there is no hope. There is no salvation outside of Christ. And if we neglect that great salvation, there is no hope. That's where we go next Sunday evening in Hebrews 2.